Chapter 36. An hour later, we loaded into several buses from the local high school and went through a number of back roads to a church on the west end of town, then walked the rest of the way to the buildings I had seen right before being captured by Clanton's sentry. One of the biggest buildings was a warehouse, and we mustered inside of it. From there, a number of Hubbard's Alpha Team members spread out into the local countryside to wait in ambush for the hunter-gatherer teams coming from Maplesville. I slept. It wasn't that I was lazy, it was more that I'd been assigned to Bravo Team. The people in Alpha knew the lay of the land there, and in many cases knew the people they were there to protect. They made far better members of ambush teams than I would have. And I was tired. It's not every day I almost die, after all. More like every month or so, I reckoned. Still, I knew I'd need my energy later, so while the rest of Bravo and Charlie teams huddled in the dark, talking via whispers, I slept, and it was a good sleep. Eventually, though, like all good things, it had to come to an end, and someone shook me awake far sooner than I would have liked. I could see via the moonlight coming through a couple of windows that the other members of my team were gathered near one of the doors, and I grabbed my gear and walked over to find out what was going on. "Okay," Wade said. "I have good news. Alpha managed to capture two of the groups, and a third group was killed. They grilled the people they captured, somewhat literally, and were able to get some information from them. We now know that they hunt in groups of five, and that they don't take more than five people at a time. While they rest up for the attack on Maplesville, it's now up to us to take out the checkpoint. In 1 hour, a group of 10 will walk up to it dressed as one of the teams and its victims, and while their attention is on our folks, the rest of us will hit them from behind as planned. Any questions?" I didn't have any. Although the plan hadn't been mine, the part of it where the group distracted the people at the checkpoint had been something I had added when the team leaders discussed the plan with me, so I was very familiar with it. "Let's go," the leader said to my group as the meeting broke up, and the others sorted out who was doing what based on the descriptions we had of the people who had been caught coming from Maplesville. We even had the clothing from two of the groups, so they would be dressed authentically. The people from Maplesville didn't need the clothes anymore. I had five of Clanton's best hunters and woodsmen with me, and we slipped out the door into the cool night air. One of the men lived just east of where we were and had been hunting this forest all his life. He led us to the north, to where a small house sat, and then to the west. We didn't have to worry about anyone sounding an alarm from the house. The family that lived there had been some of the earliest victims of the Maplesville cannibals, and since it was on the front line of the confrontation, the house had been vacant ever since. We went west for another 100 yards or so and then turned toward the checkpoint to the south. The group crept like wraiths through the forest, using the cover of a breeze blowing through to move from tree to tree, until we were within 50 feet of the cannibals' checkpoint. We were downwind of them, and I could smell them. Perhaps it was their equipment, but I was willing to bet it was them. They were rank. And we didn't have to worry about if the wind shifted direction. They wouldn't be able to smell us over their own stench. The leader gave us the halt sign, then the go to ground, and we got onto our bellies and into position. As one of our better marksmen, I had drawn the M2 gunner as my target, and I sighted in on him before taking a moment to look at the larger scene in front of me. We had come in from behind them and had a fairly good view of the back of the barricade. There were five men in sight, all of whom were watching the other direction. We waited, lying on the cool leaves, and I did my best not to wonder what else might be crawling through the leaves looking for a new home on the inside of my clothes. Ticks I knew about and immediately began having creepy crawly feelings all over my body. It was all I could do not to flick my arm when I saw the slug slowly inching its way up my sleeve toward my face. I tried to brush it off quietly, but my finger made a soft swish on my jacket. The leader shook his head at me. I went back to watching my target, and happily didn't have long to wait. A couple of minutes later, I could see the group come to attention. "Someone's coming," one of them said, the breeze bringing his words to our ears.
"Who is it?"
the M2 gunner asked. "Looks like one of the recon groups," the first to speak replied. I couldn't see the group, but expected it was our people. The group at the barricade relaxed slightly, but then one of them pointed and yelled, "That's not them!" and everyone jumped into motion. I flipped off the safety as the lead hunter yelled, "Fire!" and looked through the sights at the M2 gunner. He was just leveling the enormous weapon when the first of my bullets hit him in the back. A second and a third followed as quickly as I could get the rifle in line again, and he slumped, never having fired a shot. A second person jumped up to the gun, and I fired again, hitting an arm. The person, a woman, I could see as she turned, looked to see who'd shot her, and I hit her again in the chest. She fell backward onto the bed of the truck, then slid off the opposite direction. It seemed like everyone around me was firing, and I could hear the other group firing as well, but I couldn't see any more targets. "Cease fire!" I yelled. I yelled it again as I stood. I wanted to go check out the enemy, but I didn't want to run in front of the idiots who seemed to be just shooting to shoot. I finally got their attention, and I moved forward at a jog, not wanting to get shot by the other group that was approaching either. Amateurs, I thought with a shrug. But when I tried to think about me professionally doing something like this, nothing would come. I was really growing to hate the random thoughts that would spring unbidden into my memory. Why could I remember bits and pieces, but not everything else? I walked around the truck checking the enemy forces. All were dead, some gruesomely so. So I jumped up onto the flatbed, ready for the next phase of the night's activities. It didn't take long before we were loaded and moving. Although it was unlikely that anyone had heard the firing, it was 7 miles away and almost 2 a.m. There was no sense giving them time to prepare. Several buses followed us as the truck turned around and headed towards Maplesville, and I joined the rest of the group, I couldn't call the motley crew an assault force, in tying a strip of red cloth to my upper left arm to identify me as one of the good guys. The people on board the flatbed with me were an interesting study of the human condition, from one end of the spectrum to the other. There were several who were either crying or misty-eyed, men as well as women, all the way to people who were excited about having just participated in an assault that led to the killing of another group of people, and who were actively looking forward to doing it again. While I realized we needed people toward that end of the spectrum, people who were able and willing to kill in this new world. That was probably how we had come to the state we were in. The world had gone to war and torn itself apart because there had been too many people who were willing to kill, or to have others do it for them anyway, as well as people who were willing to carry out orders to do so. Look what it had gotten us. I shook my head. What the hell did I know? I was one of those people who had allowed myself to be used by those types of people. Happily, the drive wasn't that long, and I wasn't forced to dwell on either the world or my place in it for very long. We rolled into Maplesville, and the truck stopped at a major intersection along its version of Main Street, where we had good fields of fire in all directions. One of the buses stopped short of our intersection, and another went a block further. Without a word, everyone but me jumped off the flatbed or unloaded from the buses and went about their grim work. I manned the M2 on the back of the flatbed, content to let them do the house-to-house searches this time. It was their fight, not mine, and my body was already complaining about my overutilization of it. I was content to scan the roads leading into Maplesville for people without the red identifier, and listened to the random shots being fired as the houses were cleared. The town could have been anywhere in the American countryside before the war, with little shops on both sides of the street. It was almost peaceful, aside from the periodic bouts of gunfire, and I have to admit to zoning out. I don't think I fell asleep, quite. But then, a burst of gunfire rang out close by, and someone yelled, "Look out!" I snapped fully awake, but it took me a couple of seconds for my brain to catch up with what my eyes were seeing. It took even longer to process it. The thing, it had to be the Geno freak that Jacobs mentioned, had emerged from whatever hole it lived in, and I watched as it tore apart a four-man patrol group. The freak was larger than a normal human, at least 7 feet tall, and faster than anything that big had a right to be. The monster was dark-skinned and shiny across the length of its body. It wasn't wearing any clothes, and it blended into the night, making it hard to see. It was facing away from me, and I watched as it took a swipe at one of the men. It had to have a blade of some sort in its hand as the man's throat exploded in a spray of red visible in the light provided by the town's small street lamps. The man was thrown to the side, but the monster was already in motion. Before the body hit, he had already torn the arm off a second person with a twist and a yank and punched a third man so hard in the chest that he went flying backward, airborne at least 8 feet through the air. The fourth person in the group was a woman, and she screamed. It was cut off as the freak latched his jaws, not a full crocodile mouth, but jaws that extended at least 8 inches from his face, around her throat, and pulled back, ripping it out in another spray of blood. As the woman's body fell, the creature looked around, licking its lips, with a tongue long enough to do so. At least 3 of the people were dead, and I wasn't worried about the 4th as I cut loose with the M2. The freak saw me as I did so, though, and it leaped to the side faster than I could train the gun on it. It jumped a fence and blurred as it ran behind a church, moving so fast I could barely see it, much less hit it with the 50 caliber rounds. I took a good chunk out of the church before I could stop myself, but I figured God would understand. That thing needed to die. Having made it behind the church, I lost sight of it. If there was one thing I knew, though, it was that I was not chasing it around in the dark. I would stay right in the middle of the intersection with as much light as possible to see it. I scanned back and forth between the sides of the church, not knowing which side it would appear from, but then saw it had a third option. It had run halfway down the block and sprinted across the street before I could get the barrel of the M2 around to it. People began running toward the flatbed, yelling and asking questions, but I didn't have time for them. My concentration was locked in on the abomination that was now stalking me. I tried to keep watch on both sides of the line of buildings that ran toward me, but it again did something unexpected. It didn't come from either side. Instead, it leaped off the roof of the library and sprinted toward me. It only stopped once to grab a woman along the way and toss her at me. I would have fired at it anyway in spite of the woman, but I was too busy ducking the flesh missile to operate the weapon. I straightened, only to have it leap onto the flatbed and hit me. I didn't even see it, but it catapulted me backward off the flatbed. My body is a lot denser than most people's, and I didn't fly as far as he expected. He looked down at me, and although the crocodile mouth didn't move, his eyes indicated his puzzlement. Now in the light, I could see that his dark, shiny color came from the scales that covered his body, and that he was rampantly a human male, which was a lot more than I'd wanted to know. It shrugged and walked over to the M2 and tore the weapon from its mountings with its 2 huge webbed claws. The freak hefted the gun once, then threw it at a man who was on the street gawking up at him. The barrel impaled the man and threw him backward 5 feet on impact. Although there were now a number of people nearby, all of them standing around gawking, too amazed to do anything, it turned to look back at me and jumped off the flatbed in my direction as I stood. I drew my pistol from its holster and the creature blurred. Before I could pull the trigger, it slapped the pistol from my hand, leaving bleeding furrows marking me from my wrist down. It tilted its head back and made a loud noise. It took me a second to realize what it was. He was laughing at me. I took a couple of steps back, looking from side to side for a weapon I could use. I knew I couldn't outrun it on my best day, and today was far from it. After a couple of seconds, the creature stopped laughing and paced toward me. I could see my death approaching, stalking me. The freak was far stronger and faster than I, and we both knew it. I needed to be faster, much faster. As I had that thought, I could feel my adrenal glands kick into overdrive, and my body surged with energy unlike anything I had ever felt before. I covered the 2 steps between us faster than I'd ever moved, pulling my knife as I advanced. I don't know if I was as fast as the freak, but I was faster than he expected. He didn't get his hands up to block and barely turned aside in time. He did manage to twist, though, and instead of my knife driving through his heart, it only scored a line across his right shoulder as he turned and moved to his left. His right hand snapped back as he moved, and I ducked a blow that would surely have broken my neck. The Geno freak took two steps away from me and roared a challenge, then dropped into a ready position as if to grapple with me. There was no way I was going to wrestle the freak. There was no way that could end well. I stepped back looking for another option, all the nerves in my body aflame with the desire to move, to strike, to kill the beast. Before I could come up with a plan, though, it charged me with its arms open wide. I feinted left, then down to the right under his arms, diving at his legs. He leaned forward but missed me, and my shoulder hit him in the knees. The force of the impact cracked my collarbone and stopped me in my tracks, but I was enough of a roadblock to make the Geno freak cartwheel over me. He hit the pavement like a ton of bricks, flat on his back, and I heard the air whoosh out of him. I spun, my shoulder on fire, and raced over to him as he struggled to sit up. I grabbed him from behind and tried to run my knife across his throat, but the scales were too thick and turned my blade. He reached behind with his left arm and grabbed mine, and I nearly blacked out as he wrenched my arm so hard I could feel the broken collarbone separate. I held on with my right arm around his throat as he tried to drag me around from behind. Like the kid with the tiger by the tail, I was unable to do anything to him but hold on. To let go meant certain death. He got my arm far enough around where he could grab it with both of his webbed claws, and he adjusted his grip in preparation for throwing me. Or snapping my arm off, I wasn't sure which, but I knew I only had a moment left before I was going to be in a world of pain. Unable to do anything else, I jabbed the knife up and into the underside of his mouth, and I found the skin and scales much softer and more giving there. The knife penetrated. With a strength born of desperation, I pulled it out and jabbed it as hard as I could, sinking the blade all the way to the hilt. The Geno freak froze, then seized as all his muscles contracted at once, and I lost my grip on the knife as I was bucked over his head onto the pavement in front of him. I maintained a tenuous grip on consciousness as I hit hard and was able to push the stars back from my vision as I rolled onto my side, then onto my stomach, holding my left arm as close to my chest as I could to prevent any further damage. The gravel on the road bit into my arm, but I ignored it as I struggled to my feet to find the Geno freak twitching about spastically, while a circle of about 10 people stood around it watching. All of them were armed, and I walked over and took a pistol from the closest woman without asking, and emptied the entire magazine into the creature's head from underneath its chin. One of the men on the other side of it was coated in gore when he didn't move fast enough to get out of the way. I didn't care, nor would I have minded if he'd been hit. All I knew was that I was going to put the freak down for good. When the pistol ceased firing, I walked back to the woman I'd taken it from, handed it to her, and said, "You've got the rest of them." Then everything went as black as the asphalt I collapsed onto. Sometimes you reach your limits in this fallen world.